subjected have been given to the Speaker. The Speaker, of course, losing the rules and everything available, then can take it to the next stage. But again, the point is raised that you can't outsource the role of the National Assembly. And then again, John also explained anyway that if you are, of course, you are grieved because you think that the National Assembly took a wrong decision after the team have given clear, unambiguous finding, and then therefore can be reviewed. It's correct that we must follow the law and also follow the letter and the spirit of the majority judgment. Can we move on and see? I think we have dealt with the final report in terms of what should happen. And we are going to decide now on mechanisms. Mechanisms of handling all this. And then members always trying their level best to accommodate each other. But at the same time, they will take other views from their parties. And then they're open for persuasion, and they also then they will present it. If there's no agreement, then we'll present that as option to the Rules Committee on Thursday. But I think we are going to agree. Let us go for the preliminary stage. I think we are agreeing there, General, that the Speaker will receive it and then take it to this team. And how do we compose this team? I don't know how to call them, but as we said here, it's a committee or panel. But in terms of the team, General, how do you compose it? And Honorable Julia.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, by the way, I just wanted to say that this option one, and specifically its composition, was we actually, as the ANC said, we reserved our position on the PR. But it's okay. We're actually coming up with hopefully a recommendation that could in fact accommodate all the concerns. Chairperson, we believe we should actually differentiate between the structure that will be conducting phase one, which is the preliminary phase, and we want to make sure that because this is a very serious motion of a violation of the Constitution and or incapacity to serve as the head of state, we actually believe that one should look at a panel conducting, an objective, independent panel. Now, at one stage, yes, we said we support the notion of the committee, but we don't want to politicize the first phase. We really want to have a differentiation between what constitutes a serious violation. I mean, there are issues such as not being within the time limits of submitting notice to Parliament, for instance, when the army is deployed somewhere in Africa or wherever. But if it is, if the submission to Parliament is 24 hours late, is it really serious? Obviously, it's not serious. But if a president, an incumbent president, is, for instance, through his conduct, seen to be inciting violence or that type of matter, which is going against the grain of the Constitution, that is completely a different matter. You know, evidence, etc., that would support that. But we would like to support the notion that we go for a panel that will be appointed and that all parties will be invited to nominate, and that the panel would then be appointed similar to what we see in the panel option, you know, the establishment, etc. We believe that we could have a mechanism through which parties can nominate and then the Speaker ultimately to appoint, after inviting everybody to participate in the process. Now, secondly, we believe that the second phase is a committee process, and that is where Parliament cannot delegate its responsibility, so that it then engages and it should have the knowledge. There you could have a look at, you know, obviously Parliament, the committee would need legal services. I think Natasha last time mentioned the matter, because in the first phase, Chairperson, we don't see the need for any. Okay. Good.
Do I understand you correctly that you are proposing that the idea of a panel of competent people, very competent, they would be appointed by parties, parties would appoint, would allow a platform to appoint, and then they will, whatever they appoint, then they take it to the speaker, but the speaker then will take a final decision. Simply means that would be after consultation, parties will be allowed platform, they say, man, this is what you want to do. Please nominate whoever you want to nominate, objectively, not members of parliament. And then whoever can be nominated can be one judge, and there can be other people there or two, whatever. And then the speaker then says, okay, this is what you have done. And then let us then appoint that one. But members of parliament are not involved at all.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, first I must just say that this is a massive deviation from where we were last week. This takes us straight back to square one. And one of the issues that we raised last week, and we were in broad agreement as a committee, was the fact that we as members of Parliament are the only body that holds the executive to account. We vote in the President and we remove the President. And that was broadly agreed upon. And that's why, to appease issues that our colleagues had in terms of some sectors of the committee wanting only a panel to decide on impeachment, on the impeachment process, and others wanting just Parliament, we came up with a hybrid system, which was very much largely agreed upon. Chair, in the judgment, if you read it, it clearly states that Parliament has an obligation to put together its rules and to execute its rules. Now, that doesn't include an outside panel. It means Parliament, the members of Parliament. Chair, also, you know, we have to safeguard, and the judgment says this, against the threat of majoritarianism. And as we said before, we're not only drafting rules for this Parliament, we're drafting rules for the Parliament to come. So at the moment, the majority, and I emphasize at the moment, the majority is the ANC. In 2019, it could be a very different looking parliament. Now, if you A, start a panel and you nominate people from different parties, what's to stop the ANC, in this because I'm talking about now, or whatever parties in the majority, from saying, right, no, we don't like that person, we don't see your nomination is no good, your nomination is no good. And I liken it in some respects maybe to like an SABC board, where whether we like it or not, the fact is that the ANC have the final say as to who serves on that board, and often they accommodate other parties by giving one or two members, but the majority of the people that are on that board are the choice of the governing party. And we discussed this at length last week. And majoritarianism, whether the ANC is in power, whether the DA is in power, whether the IFP is in power, remains a concern. And it should be a concern, because we have to be the elected people's parliament. That's why specifically it was said that it would be helpful, and to make this completely unbiased, and to protect politicians from themselves, to have one member from each political party that is represented in the House be on that panel. And then, because not all of us are legal experts, and let's be honest, many times MPs go a bit astray because you can't see the wood for the trees, have that co-panel with us to make sure that we are abiding by the law and certainly going in the right direction. And Chair, to now, you know, bring before us the idea that we have a panel that decides this preliminary part. Well, then, with the greatest deal of respect, and I know that this is not what Julie intended, but what it means is that it's all for null anyway. Because that panel actually has the determining say as to whether or not it comes to Parliament in the first place. So what's the point of then preaching one person from each party? Because ultimately that panel will be made up of members as decided on by the party that has the majority. And that's exactly what the judgment warned us against. And Chair, I hasten to add, you know, already we're acting under instruction where we have been remiss and been shown to be remiss by the Constitutional Court. I will argue that a Constitutional Court will find that an unconstitutional loophole. And I think it is a loophole, Chair, because it's the polite way of saying, well, the majority party will still decide whether or not this goes before Parliament or whether or not we commence with an investigation. Because that's what happens when we appoint panels in Parliament. It's just how it works. It is actually that simple. So, Chair, I would caution us against that dramatically. And I would, and please understand it, and to my colleagues, I don't say this because it was a recommendation that I pushed last week. But I honestly and truly believe that if we are to approach this in the fairest, most democratic way possible, that no one can say there has been political bias or in any way a protection mechanism to stop an impeachment process. We adhere to the hybrid system. And we go forward in that manner because it also creates goodwill. And as sitting, we have two ANC members who sit in front of us. Imagine if they are put in a situation where they are told, you both will go in and vote for these particular people, even though one of them may perhaps think there is an impeachment charge, but is asked to vote, not according to their conscience, but to toe the party line. And Chair, we've seen this happen. We know that this has happened because, you know, we're political parties after all. One member from each party takes the pressure of that even ever happening. So, Chair, I just really want to put that out as a massive caution.
My understanding, though, Honourable Mazoli, is that we are talking about people who are independent of Parliament. We appoint them, there are three, there are two, there are four, there are five. And then one of them may decide that is a judge, or two of them may be judges. You may also invite, if you think that would be unfair, Chief Justice can appoint two or one judge sitting in that panel. But these ones are not members of Parliament because it's a preliminary stage. And then they work out, then they report. Because we have already said, Parliament or National Assembly there, receiving a report, they look at it, they vote by a simple majority whether they go to the next stage or not. They can still do that in a majority party, sir. Majority party can still do that. You know. Even when we go there with a preliminary report to take a decision whether you go to the next stage or not, majority party can still stop it. There's a point that will be there. And the judgment doesn't say anyway. I didn't find really court ruling that majoritarian is a problem. I think they were just saying, whatever we do, should try to ensure that it's open, it's transparent, and then that we are able to do our work without fear or favor. And then I think we must try to do that. If we can, of course, I think we can make proposals to the Rules Committee on Thursday. One proposal can be a proposal that Julie are putting forward of a team. This team, anyway, all parties will be allowed some space to propose, and then if the committee decides, sometimes the Rules Committee decides there are five members or three members, and then all of us will say, now we propose so and so, a very competent person, he got skills, and the person that is objective. He's not a person who's conflicted, And then, of course, we'll have interest. Everyone will have interest. But it's not conflicted. Therefore, this person can then do this thing without fear or favor. And then he can do that. Otherwise, again, can go back to the hybrid proposal, put it also the proposal for the rules committee to consider, John. And then Mkulego will follow.
Yeah, thanks very much. I'm just uncomfortable about Parliament outsourcing its responsibility. And I think that what we must be mindful that this is a parliamentary action step. And Section 46 of the Constitution is very clear about who constitutes the National Assembly. It's 350 men and no more than 350 and no more than 400 women and men elected, and it sets out the criteria. It specifically excludes anyone who's appointed who's in the service of the state and receives remuneration for that appointment. Now, you would know that even retired judges receive their remuneration from the state until their death. And so I just think we must be very careful about having an exclusive committee. Now, that's why I think that we argued quite strongly in favour of a hybrid system where you have some guidance from people who, you know, may have been there. But I think that the composition of the report has to be done by members. You can't have a report coming to the floor of the National Assembly from a committee that's not made up of members of the National Assembly. Of course, there are exceptions, and those are the Chapter 9 institutions, but they're specifically provided for and their reporting mechanism in terms of the Constitution. I also then worry about privilege. Privilege will not apply to these individuals because, as I said, they're not members of Parliament. Their ability to summon and to hold people accountable and the powers that are vested in members of Parliament and Parliament and its committees to be able to dysfunction, I'm not convinced that these are extended to people who are not meeting the criteria of Section 46 of the Constitution. And I think this could grossly inhibit their ability to actually drill down and get to the bottom of what they need to do. And so, you know, whilst I think we also have this panacea of retired judges, and we assume that when somebody takes the bench or leaves the bench, that they themselves have no inherent political bias. I think that we all know and have experienced or have views on it's not something you leave at the door, you know, when you go into that position. So just to assume that someone's a retired judge and there's no inherent bias. I think that what we have to do, if we're going to introduce external people, we must not lose the guiding hand of elected members of the National Assembly that are elected in terms of Section 46 of the Constitution and who have the powers vested in them then to subpoena, to summon, and are protected by privilege. And so I think that is why I would argue that, you know, rather than for a wholesale outsourcing of that preliminary phase, that we do include members of the National Assembly. So we can't be seen to be abrogating our responsibility or outsourcing it, but that we are able to bring in individuals, much like we've done with the evidence leader in the State Capture Committee, to come and give us expert advice and opinion, and to bring a perspective of, you know, what constitutes fair hearing, what constitutes due process, fair process, etc. But I think we would be opposed to a wholesale outsourcing in that first step.
Honourable Shangwa, Honourable Boy.
Okay, no, thanks, Chair. No, I just didn't want to come back before I just made this input. I really think, Chair, that we would be venturing down a very slippery slope if we now take what I see as 10 steps backwards. Because fundamentally, it is the duty of Parliament that elects the President. You see, what maybe I would not have been surprised to hear is that an argument to say, no, Parliament must first make a determination whether these grounds are sufficient and so on, and then maybe saying, right, maybe let's find an external panel. That would probably, in the most extreme cases, make sense. But then to say, no, Parliament, sit back, allow those guys to do this on your behalf, and then we'll take it from there, leaves me very, very uncomfortable. Because I think it goes back to the argument that we've been making all along, Chairperson. Parliament must not deface responsibility. I think it amounts to chickening out, to say we'll want to come in only for voting processes at the end, say no, we'll vote. And I've consistently said, Chairperson, let us allow a parliamentary process and build into it external assistance. Not the other way around, where parliament feeds into an external process. And I think we must make MPs of today and tomorrow must be bold to their convictions and bold to their oath of office and take up the responsibility of confronting the man and woman that they have elected head on. Because I don't think that we all members of parliament are elected for niceties only. They are precisely elected for those difficult moments. Now, when that moment comes and you want a determination to be made elsewhere, let's assume that members don't accept that report. What if that report comes and says, no, there's no basis for it? Because some of the things, here, the serious violations, Chairperson, may, for all intents and purposes, also must not turn away from the fact that they are subject to political interpretation. The serious violations that we're speaking about of the Constitution, they will be subject to political consideration. So I'm really, Chairperson, saying that no. We are now really not achieving what we had wanted to achieve. Let us allow a parliamentary process, because all intents and purposes, we are saying we want MPs to be MPs of nice time. And I don't think that is correct. I think what we have had here is correct. And then have those, if we spoke about medical experts, we spoke about legal experts feeding into the parliamentary process. Who guides this independent panel now that we want to put in place? Will it come back and report to the Speaker, and then it's the Speaker who must come and report to the House? We literally going to vote on a process that we have been bystanders to, on a grave matter of national importance, of which underpins everything that we're supposed to be doing. I don't think, Chair, that we will. And I want to emphasize what John has said, because that's the first thing that came to mind. Where does this place the Powers and Privileges Act? What authority does that structure have? We may delegate the duty, but I don't think we can delegate the privileges and immunities that we have. That will never happen, no ways about it. These presentations that the president was saying they must make, where they don't come to, the president is not then accounting to us. He's accounting to an independent panel there who makes submissions. So, and the stumbling block then becomes this thing, which we will still vote on a report that was not ours. So we are really subjecting ourselves to saying, one, don't participate. Two, we're going to subject this to a vote. And then, where does this, literally taking a member of parliament outside his jurisdiction who would have ever placed the motion to, no, go and present your case elsewhere, not amongst your peers, not amongst your colleagues. Let's be bold to our convictions, Chairperson, and our oath of office.
But the point, though, Julie, you must come also and try to assist with your proposal. The point, though, that we must also know, I'm not sure how to deal with it, because there will always be proportional representation. If you take a view that team of five or six, whatever, is set aside by parliament and then is proportionally represented, even if it's a small team, proportionally represented, and then look at this matter, propose whatever they propose. I thought that the point that almost all of us were talking about, that would be a good idea to have people who are not members of parliament, active members of parliament. It doesn't mean that judges have no interest, but are not conflicted. But they have they do have interest, but are not conflicted. Therefore, they can who put a judge, maybe one judge, who put another forensic aspect there, who put another building inspector aspect there. I'm just saying that people with competent things that will assist you to arrive at a decision. And that would be a good idea. But it seems also you are raising other issues that you are raising, Julian.
Yes, Chairperson, I think we must just try, what we're trying to do is we have listened to the concern expressed by opposition parties and by the court. And that is that there must not be, like in the case of Mazibuku, where the programming committee was deciding by majority decision what goes into the program and not. There was a different mechanism that was developed. Now, similar here, what we want to make sure is that this panel has only one purpose, and that is to assess all evidence presented and to decide if there is a real case for inability or prima facie evidence to determine if a serious violation of the Constitution of or the law was committed, B, serious misconduct, or C, inability to perform the functions of office. And that is as per the Constitution. And upon determination of that, they would say, yes, here's a case to answer. The speaker asks them, she appoints them, she says, this is the evidence that you have to scrutinize, etc. And that is it. That is where their task ends. They report to the speaker. This is what we found, and in fact, the next phase of the process must kick in. We try to avoid political arguments in the first phase, because that must be scrutinized, whether it is in fact violations or problems listed in Section 89. And that is a serious nature, because Honorable Slengwa says, yes, but, you know, politicians must decide. The problem is, obviously, it is in the opposition's interest to bring any motion and then to side in a committee to say, this is a serious violation, we want to proceed to the next step. So we try to take the politics out. It would be in the governing party's interest to protect the president, who would be from their side, you know. So we try to differentiate whether it is permissible. I think one should say that is not really performing the function of a committee. It is advising the head of the institution whether there is indeed a serious case. Then it is thereafter. It is a committee process, and the committee engages then in the impeachment process. And we want to make sure that we, in fact, take note of what the court said about blocking. There must be no opportunity for blocking a motion in terms of Section 89. So if we can do that, and all of that is transparent, etc., then clearly that is a matter that must be proceeded with. But when it comes to the second phase of the process, it is a committee, and that is where the recommendation would be made that this is a serious violation, and indeed we have engaged in the submission made by the incumbent president, and we agree that the president must be removed from office, and that is a committee process. And all of that must then be presented to the National Assembly for a vote. So the alternative would be, Chairperson, is that the committee is appointed. A committee of members is appointed. But obviously that first phase then to be conducted by a subcommittee, which is then not taking... Well, you see, the problem is that the panel must report to the speaker, because the speaker must submit to Parliament for the next phase of the process to kick in. It is just important to differentiate between the two phases. The one is very, legal and or medical in nature, where you have experts, depending on the allegations brought in terms of a transgression in terms of Section 89, you would constitute the panel. And we can talk about who and how big the panel would be. But can we not make sure that we remove the politics from the first phase? And then the second phase, it is the parliament, members of parliament, taking over the process of impeachment as is foreseen as they function in terms of the constitution. Thank you, Jim.
Why can't you then go to a next phase in terms of the mechanism, the composition, just to ensure that we link the two, maybe can give comfort general on that. But also would be very rare for a governing party to be taken as if we are scared to use members to decide the process of parliament. I think what we're trying to do, because there were accusations that now, if we use members, we use politics there, this thing would die even before it's considering anything. And we felt that we are persuaded by the argument. And then this argument that says, have people who are competent anywhere in South Africa, put them in there, and then they will be objective, then they give a view on that matter. And then, of course, it seems members again say, no, we can't outsource that. It simply means that the view that they are expressing. But go for the second composition of the bigger team. Then we can link the two and see whether we can make some recommendation that we can take to the Rules Committee. The day we are left with only one day is tomorrow before the Rules Committee. The staff will have time also a little bit to redraft everything. Okay.
Chairperson, the second process is certainly, because remember this report, this engagement will then take place. We will get replies, and that committee, we believe, is constituted according to the PR representation of Parliament. It conforms to all of the other committees. That committee then to report, but all of that obviously in the open. And that committee to then report to the National Assembly. And then the Assembly will decide whether they accept the recommendations or don't. And obviously, as we have already said, that two-thirds majority would be necessary in order to remove the President from office.
That committee will use the rules of the committees of National Assembly, can invite FPEC to assist them. Okay, honorable boy, at least now, just linking the two, maybe we can make some proposal and move on.
You know, I was just going to say to members, it's a matter of principle that we are looking at, that we are saying that this is long term. We are not dealing with a very subjective environment. We are trying to find a manner that could help us in the long term. And this is all we're looking for. If other parties or other people feel they want to use it next week, that's what we wouldn't be able to stop. But the chair will always say, when you write the rules, don't write them on the basis of I'm preparing for tomorrow. You see? And I thought that we are presenting what we have been trying to test amongst ourselves, that is this going to be workable? Because it might not be the 80th tomorrow, it might be a coalition government. What are you going to do? You see, you need to find some neutral point where different views and divergent points are going to be raised. I mean, that's all I wanted to caution about, that we are dealing with the long-term development that we're looking into. The issue of majority, I mean, of do we use majority or we don't use majority, I think that we have efficiently dealt with each person. As of now, we're confronted with it, but it might not be there in the near future. What are you going to do? How are you going to approach it? Because rules are not subjectively for today, but we should be able to talk like, as we always say to each other, draft the rule, and if it's workable, it will work, you see. But if you are going to say the material conditions now, so-and-so is governing party, which you have said, there's no governing party, but the ruling party, at the end of the day, you'll never write a rule, because you are always basing it on the situations that are confronting you. And I thought that what Judy was explaining was more long-term, that anything can happen beyond 2019, but would that capacity be there to be able to impeach a particular president at that time, and how do you resolve that matter? And this is where we're coming from, Jefferson.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, I think this is an interesting and good debate, and I think it's, again, a dilemma that we have. I mean, how do you bring around a process that's fair and that gives true effect to the spirit and of the Constitution as well as the judgment? But that being said, you know, I think there's also a measure of accountability that we need to think about as well. So as members of Parliament, we swear an oath of office. We can't take our seats in the National Assembly until we've done so, and that imposes certain obligations on us. We're bound by the code of ethics about how we behave both in the House and outside of the House. The rules of Parliament guide us. And we're protected and constrained by the powers and privileges and immunities of Parliament and Provincial Legislatures Act. And so those will not apply. And how do we hold those people accountable if they, you know, perform their function in bad faith? They, you know, are found to have taken money from somebody to vote in a certain way, and we mustn't rule these things out. I mean, these are the reality that we live with today, and we know that. And we also mustn't, pardon the phrase, pretend to be virgins in a brothel. You know, this is a political process, and even a appointment of external people, as we've seen with boards for the last 10 years, doesn't guarantee you that the persons are not going to be selected with a political outcome in mind. And I would rather err on a situation where we're able to hold people accountable for a very crucial piece of work within the parliamentary rules environment, within the constraints of the Constitution and the privileges granted by the Constitution, which non-members of Parliament simply cannot be extended to them. It's a right and privilege that's only extended to elected members of Parliament to meet the criteria of 46. And so I think that we would really almost give them an impossible task, to be honest with you, without being able to form those functions, without having MPs, members of the National Assembly, as part of that committee. So I don't think we're opposed to having a discussion around how we bring in the people that Judy speaks to. But I'm just really, I would err from an accountability perspective, from a functionality perspective, being able to do it.
Let me just raise, because I think we may use your wisdom to assist us. If we take a view that first we agree that the committee, the main committee, is a committee of members of Parliament composed on the proportional representation, the main committee, like the rules committee. And then that committee will have then a subcommittee. When a matter is raised, the speaker then referred that to a subcommittee of the main committee. The subcommittee of the main committee will be members of parliament. But the rules allow us to invite experts to come and advise us if we take a decision on that. Because we should try to balance the two. And then, because you can have a main committee, it's proportionally representation. We can't avoid that. And then in that main committee, they have a committee like us here. A subcommittee of the main committee is given that task preliminary. They look at everything. They have discussion. They invite whoever they want to invite, of course, through the permission. And then they make their determination, predetermination. They come to, they report. They say there's an issue, there's no issue. And then if there's an issue, and then the next stage takes on, then the main committee itself then deals with the matter. Because I think we should try to balance the two. The point that all of us as members of parliament, we have taken an oath. We are also accountable. And then allowing us to have a main committee, that main committee is proportionally represented, generally. Because you can't have it unless it's proportionally representation. And then we'll have then a working committee or the subcommittees we are having here, they work. They come to the main committee, they give a report, and then the main committee look at the report, then say, we think that there's an issue here. And then the next stage then kicks in. and then that we don't then take out members of parliament, but members of parliament anyway, by rules, we are allowed to invite whoever that you can invite to come and assist us, because some of us are not lawyers, some are lawyers, then we can invite other people to come in on that. And then if we take that approach, actually, I'm not sure whether it can assist us, because I'm just worried that we may stick to this mechanism in such a way that we have dealt with many other issues that are very critical. And then, I'm not sure what you call a committee, but it will be a committee, standing committee, or whatever you want to do. And then within that, we have your working committee. The speaker referred that and said, no, the subcommittee must work, because we can't work as a big committee. Work on this matter, find a predetermination, sit down, look at it, present it, the report is considered, and then the committee work it out then through processes of parliament. I'm just saying we must consider many options to give it to the rules committee to take a final decision. Because the point that says members of parliament can't outsource their responsibility is a very strong power. But the point that Jenny Julie is presenting, that try to avoid using politics at the initial stage when you start just to determine whether there are issues here or not, there's a ground here or not, there's a prima facie evidence or not, and then take our members there, because members anyway, they sit in the main committee that deals with this matter. I think we should consider doing that. You can then propose it to the rules committee on Thursday. They consider these options, then the rules committee must take decision. But let us take another round for members to comment. Let me take this question.
Chair, if I'm correct, this position is consistent with what was discussed last week, except on the composition of the structure now. Because the hybrid mechanism had a committee working with a panel. And the hybrid mechanism also had a subcommittee. So if my understanding is correct, is that now you would have this committee, but proportionally representative. You would still have the committee, which must appoint a panel. Whether you want to specify that it's retired judges is something else. You might want to say a panel of experts.
Yes,
so that you create room to maneuver on that. And obviously, speaker would refer matters to the committee. It is the committee that will decide that it must go to the subcommittee. Speaker would not deal with the subcommittee directly, but will go to the parent committee, which must then utilize the subcommittee. Is that a correct summation, Chair?
That's what I wanted us to propose. We can take the second we approach, but take also this one. The point that is the valid point, and not also was the initial point. And then, but to say that we can also do things with some colleagues in the meeting, they think that some form of aspect without us is fine. But it seems members are saying that, you know, those members of parliament are here. They've got responsibility. Therefore, they've got the right to invite whoever they want to invite to assist them. And then the matter committee is there. And then the speaker refers it to them. They sit down, they look at it, they give it to the subcommittee. The subcommittee works on it, and they invite whoever. Panel of experts, whoever they want to invite. And then they sit down, they look at this, they see their grounds for it in terms of Section 89. Then they say no, so they take it, and then they move forward. And then let us look at it, maybe that's it.
No, Chair, I precisely wanted to say what has been said now, that the parent committee must have a subcommittee, as one has been saying all along. Let us build experts into a parliamentary process, not the other way around. Because, Chair, even the issue of independence of a panel, the irony of it is that this parliament received the public protector's report into Uganda, established a committee and went and rewrote the entire report. So we cannot even bank on the issue of what independence will gain the respect and which we're trying to afford to know it's that process. Let us rather hold ourselves accountable here as opposed to giving that responsibility also. Because, Chair, the other fundamental issue I wanted to raise on the issue of a panel goes back to the point I raised about 20 motions coming in. Now, if you're going to be tailor-making a panel to deal with what is presented before you, the speaker says, right, I've received a motion which is about A, B, C, D, and so you want to find the relevant experts in that field. The next time, now something else has come in, now you're re-engineering to find another set of experts. You literally strengthen the argument that you are outsourcing. Let us rather, Chairperson, really, really, as I think what Mr. Klaus has articulated is exactly what was in my mind, let us allow a parent committee and have, you know, a subcommittee. We can deal with the nitty-gritties of composition, but I think the principle is that let this be a parliament-driven process. So, Chairperson, that's, I want to, you know, emphasize, support fully that approach, because an external panel will be very clumsy in terms of dealing with whatever you receive and then outsourcing, right, this one. Let's rather keep it in-house and bring the experts to come and assist.
Yeah, I'm covered, and I'm very comfortable with what's been proposed today, because I think it's encompassing all of our concerns and attempts. I just want to make one more suggestion, if I may, and that's under 3. The committee must select one of its members as chairperson and another as deputy chairpersons. I would propose that we use the Ghanaian model there and say that such members not to be from the same political party, because what that then does is takes away the bias. It's just something for us to consider. Going forward into the process, because then I think it brings a bipartisanship or a multi-partyism to that committee, and again tries to take the politics out. We're never going to get the politics out of it. I think that's the, you know, as I said earlier, you know, it's, yeah. But I mean, as a gesture, I think it would show that, you know, this is a committee that's serious about the work of Parliament, not necessarily there to do the work of a political party. It's just something to consider in the moment.
We will make proposal to the
MADA committee. Chairperson, thank you. Can I also just say, I was wondering if the word charge in initiation is the correct word. Should we not, I see the court speaks of complaints. Can we just perhaps, it is in section, first page, paragraph 2, under the heading Initiation of Section 89 Procedure. For purposes of proceedings to remove the President in terms of Section 89(1)(c), the term, the complaints must be understood as the grounds for, you know, etc., etc., just the word. And then second thing, Chair, I think we must, I'm fine with what was discussed now. It was somehow just to differentiate between the first process so that we don't fall foul of creating a blocking mechanism. So, but if we can do that in this way, it's fine. Can I just ask that we then understand that we must make sure that we have a clear understanding of what that first phase is, and that is to assess all evidence, to determine if for that process to decide if there is a prima facie evidence of A, you know, as per the Constitution, A, a serious violation of the Constitution or the law, B, serious misconduct, or C, inability to perform the function of office. You know, so that we can describe that in our rule, so that we understand that that is the purpose of the first phase. Then it goes to the House, and then the next process kicks in. I don't know if we would require any further rules for the impeachment process itself. You know, I know that we have also been guilty of perhaps sometimes developing procedures in so much detail. I think that could probably be decided by the committee once that starts, because remember, committees have the right to develop their own procedures. And perhaps we should not be too prescriptive as far as that is concerned. So if we can then, but I think we must just have a clear understanding about the first phase of the process. Thank you, Chair.
Yes.
two issues. So we're saying the committee must appoint a panel, right? It's not discretionary, or is it discretionary?
Yes, it should be.
Must. Okay. And may. May. Yeah.
Why I say that is if there's a constitutional court judgment that says the president has seriously violated the constitution, there's no need for us to have a panel to, and it's an open and shut case. We've got the court judgment, the highest court in the land has ruled that the president seriously violated the constitution. You don't need to form a panel for that. The committee will then say, well, this must now proceed and we will go to the vote in the House. But, you know, if there's a technical argument about, you know, so Julie used the good example the other day around the deployment of the Defence Force, if there's an unforeseen circumstance and the letter arrives at Parliament a day after the prescribed notice period, is that a serious violation? And, you know, some, I might think it is, you may not, but, you know, then maybe you'd have to get a legal expert and maybe a constitutional lawyer to come in and say, well, is this, you know, I'm just using it as a different... Yeah, so I think that may.
The mother committee takes a decision. You can't take a decision on their behalf. Then they may decide. Sometimes they may say the entire mother committee takes becomes a preliminary, and then which is difficult. What it be? Because all parties are represented there, unless we agree. That will go for the 651 and accord for follow committees. And then the ANC 6, the other parties 5, then the committee is small. But if we go for proportional representation and all parties represented, will be a committee of about 39 or whatever. And then, but this committee is not expected to meet every day. May meet once in 5 years, once in 20 years. Generally, I don't think that committee then may, I think we may pass it, because we are giving them the right to decide whether they appoint it or not. But under normal circumstances, a bigger committee like that will appoint the subcommittee to work on their behalf and they will report to them. Okay.
May was applicable in respect of the panel,
yeah.
Not the subcommittee. The subcommittee, I think, has to be appointed. Then point five, under functions and powers,
yeah.
The committee must, when it reports, include in its report a report of the panel. Do we want that?
No.
Or do we want to say May again?
May.
May, all right.
Well, in the member.
Yeah. We are good, Chair, from our side.
Can we proceed? Of course, we prefer, I think we are preferring, we may be delayed, and then we are preferring this one
of a mother committee doing the work, not this committee of experts before this one. I think we prefer that one, but of course, if the rules committee prefer this one of a small non-members of parliament who are competent, knowledgeable, coming in, I think we'll have an argument on that and have a debate on that. Because there may be other members who still prefer that. And then I think we'll engage that openly and then we see then how we persuade them. But we prefer this one as a team. And of course, these are options that were there. Just to ensure that we don't close other people out completely. They may have valid point to convince us. Yeah, but I'm saying that if our valid point of convincing the team says no members, surely members are members. They must at the end take a final decision. Okay.
Can we... On functions of the committee, I think we are clear. Any
should that you want to raise on the function of the committee? Can we
move to decision? Any matter there on decision that you want to take?
Can we move on? Next page. It's almost... What do you have to discuss?
Chair, could I suggest, because the EFF made this proposal, the panel, maybe we take both options to the
rules committee. Yeah.
Because EFF is not here to speak to it.
Yeah, because they're not here. We will take the proposal there. And then, but this team prefers this one. Of course, there's another option, that is the option one and two. I think we can survive with that one. And then this panel issue then is there, chairperson and everything, I think will be worked out, the consequential. Tabling of a report, any issue there? And no issue. Of course, it will be an issue if we take the route of a panel. But it seems many parties, since even in our first meeting, Julie, many parties in fact argued against some of the panel. I think the IFP, COPE, DA, AFF Plus, about five parties in fact. The ANC says, no, we don't need, you need members. But EFF also presented, I think was a very good proposal, said let us accommodate this way and there. It seems parties have gone back to their original thinking in terms of a mother committee, setting up a working committee rather than panel. Because anyway, we are going to seek their assistance. And because not all of us are judges and lawyers, not all of us are forensic experts, all that, then we need those experts, the competent people to come and assist. I think that makes sense, yes, ma'am.
Chairperson, you know, what we've decided now actually, in fact, helps overcome the whole issue of a panel that cannot report to the National Assembly. Otherwise, we had to introduce a mechanism that it must be the speaker who reports on behalf of a panel, and that would also have been difficult because then it's almost speaker. So I think in this case, you know, halfway through the recommendation, I was in fact reconsidering if it would not make sense that it is a subcom that would conduct that first component. The reason was just that we heard the concerns expressed, that we wanted to have this sort of objective assessment. But I think we are all on the same page now. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, honourable members, are we comfortable with what we have discussed? Any other member have some serious issue with the work that is given to us? We accept that then the team support Steve is going to sit down, look at it, and then write it nicely, then ourselves, and then they will present it to us tomorrow, circulate it, tomorrow to all members, and then on Thursday we can be confidently present this to the Rules Committee for consideration. Any issue that we are missing there? We are happy. Can we then adjourn the meeting? Thank you very much for your participation, contribution. We are still invited for something to eat.